Hello again, and welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is a tri-weekly show sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Been in business well over two decades, operating from one of the finest facilities in the nation. That matters a lot because we are hardcore brick and mortar, okay? You're on the internet now. What guarantees do you got? Zip. You start shipping $100,000 off to buy gold or something, you better be careful. You better be careful. I'll tell you, a lot of these companies have commissioned salespeople. Believe me, every day, no exaggeration, minimum, every day we're trying to help people get out of messes that they got into on the internet, where they sent money to somebody they found on the internet. I mean, let's face it, how hard is it to make a really, really good looking website on the internet? How hard is it to get, to tell people you've been in business forever? And by the way, for those of you who may not know any better, an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau is not of much value. You can check with the Better Business Bureau for references, ratings, complaints from the people, from the client. That's fine. That makes sense. But an A-plus rating is what everybody gets who signs up. So when you sign up with the Better Business Bureau, you automatically start out with an A-plus rating. And it really is it's a way to get a lot of money out of you. I'll be honest. It's not cheap. And I'll give you some advice that none of you need or want. Okay, one thing I tend to do is I tend to be a little charitable, okay? So I always tip well. In the very few occasions I don't tip well, it's because it was that unearned. But man, is that rare. I tip very, very well. I try to pay people very, very well. I try to pay my employees well. I try to take care of people, you know. I want to be a smart businessman. I don't want to be a fool. A fool and his money are soon parted. We don't want that. The Bible says that. And we especially don't want that because we're what? We are financial stewards, okay? We've talked on the show multiple times about the logic of God putting money at the central core of our existence, as in gold and silver. Remember that Hebrew, the language, doesn't even have a word for money. Now, Hebrew is the oldest written language. You know, we've all heard about cuneiform, you know, from the Sumerian cone, where they would write on cones, but that was, you know, they created symbols, and yes, that's an early, early language. However, when it comes to a fully developed, expanded language, there is nothing that even compares to ancient Hebrew, okay? So, if ancient Hebrew does not have the word money, okay, you got a two-edged sword. On one edge, you have the fact that, people communicate how they communicate. On the other edge, you have the fact that we have incredible documentation from people who learned God's word, God's language, you know, et cetera. And that's really where I feel where we are today. I mean, We've got so many languages, it's unbelievable. Isn't it interesting, and I know there's probably not people out there that are into linguistics, but it is quite interesting how language has grown and become more and more evolved. Okay, you know this if you read the King James Bible. When I read the Bible when I was a young buckaroo, a younger Christian feller, I had developed words to replace whenever I saw them in the King James. In my mind, I had already developed words to replace them with these and thous and thys and, you know, and a lot of other stuff. And I just replaced them with the English root. Mentally, I would read it as modern day language. But it's important to understand if the Hebrews, the oldest real written language on earth, not the oldest, you know, sample they found on a clay cone. That's not a language. When we get into Egyptian history, I mean, you have a language there. They had developed that and developed that and developed that. You know, as a believer, people are very interested in Egypt or in Israel. But I will tell you, the Egyptian history intrigues me because the Egyptians were, I think they were the first real settlers. I think that people sat down in the Nile Quadrant after the flood. It's my belief, first of all, that there was a great flood. I think the earth is covered with evidence. When you go to the Grand Canyon, where everybody, you know, uses as an explanation of evolution, I see it as just the opposite. It's the evidence of creation. And what I mean by that is it was a cataclysmic event that caused that to take place. It's huge cataclysmic event. We have areas that are 200 miles square or 50, 60, 70, 100, 150 miles long that are not only flat as a board. And I mean flat, like they were like butter cut by a sharp knife. But then adjacent to them is the Grand Canyon. So what I guess intelligent scientists say, meaning those with without some anti-religious bias, and because if they admit there was a great flood, suddenly, apparently, in their minds, it puts their entire faith on the rocks. Well, to me, that's a little bit silly, because you either are or you're not. And I think it's important to realize who you're trying to please. It's hard not to try to please man. I'll give you that. But God calls us and tells us our job is not, by the way, he doesn't call us on a telephone. When I say he calls us, he calls upon us. And so when he does that, when God's calling us, you know, to him, I think it's important. Well, the Bible's very clear that windows will open up, and they don't remain open endlessly. Some of us are very long. Some of us are the type of people that live a long, healthy, happy life, lots of friends. Some of us have to work all the darn time like me. just to break even. My business, honestly, folks, is probably one of the craziest. It's got to be the most labor-intensive business I've ever heard of. And by labor-intensive, I know some of you think, well, what about garbage truck drivers or what about cops or whatever? I'm talking labor-intensive as far as, you know, what it takes to make it work, you know. So anyhow, back to where we started, if I can be so gracious to find. Okay, here we go. This is an interesting article I'm going to bounce through. Years back, let's see how old this article is. This article is dated. It's not dated, okay? It's on Breitbart. Oh, yes, it is. It's dated the 5th of July, 2018. So it's pretty pretty accurate. The communists, you know, why do communists want a, what do you call it? I don't know. But why do they want a violent overthrow? Why do they want that kind of control? You know, and they use violence to do everything. It's kind of hard, as a quick side note, I'm going to be honest with you. We are in the middle of a move. I've mentioned this before. And we're like right now, this is our last week. It's drop dead week. My wife, of course, had to have the grandkids over for the weekend. She loves them more than anything you could ever imagine. And so they were over, so that cut in. So we've been staying up like late. So if I sound a little groggy, a little tired, I know once in a while people get concerned and they'll call the shop and make comments. I've just, you know, between trying to run the business, trying to keep up with investment packages, and move, and you know, a very, very large house, and we sold our house on the water. We had 60 days to get out of it. We negotiated a 60-day occupancy window, which means that we had 60 days to be out of the home and have another place to live, because A, I have 3 dogs, and B, you got to have a roof over your heads. I sure wouldn't want to make somebody homeless, okay? So we had to move fast. So we ended up buying a nice house. I think it needs a little bit of service remodel to change the colors. I've always had very, very, very large homes. And usually pretty high quality. This home is a nice home. It's a 2-level. It's got 30 acres. It's made out of solid brick, just pure, beautiful brick from the mid 2000s. Okay. People were like back then, you know, getting all the custom designer rock. They were getting a lot of, what do you call it? Just massive tonnages that they were running, you know, they run it through sieves and all kinds of machinery, and hopefully ultimately out the other end pops gold. For a while there was a scam going on where these guys would show up in hotel rooms and they'd say, do you want to make some money? Well, the answer is usually sure. The real answer should be, well, that really depends on what you expect of me, you know, and a lot of times it just didn't, okay, and we, you know, typical situation. So it's just the way it is. Why do communists desire violent takeovers? That is the magic question. There's things in this world that I don't completely understand at all. Let me check this out. Why are they trying for, whatever. So my apologies. I got a lot going on. But anyway, so why do communists always resort to extreme violence to get their way? We know that communists, in general, have rewritten who they are. They've lied so many times you can't keep track of any of it, and let alone believe it. And they're taught by the Quran, A.K.A. the clerics and whoever's interpreting it for them, but most of them don't read it themselves. And if they read the Quran, I think they'd find, I've read the Quran, and there's some pretty symbolic examples in there. There's some beautiful writing, and then there's a lot of it that's very harsh, destructive, violent, uncompromising, tough, just tough stuff, okay? And that's in there. And they have in detail how to take a family and execute them one by one, starting with the youngest and working your way to the oldest, and making them watch. And I mean, watch terrible things happen to your family. Thank God for heaven. Thank God that he has a lot of believers that are going to be with him. We don't know where we go when we die, per se. Okay? We know that Jesus mentioned heaven and hell and, this kind of stuff, but we don't know. We know that Jesus said, today you'll be with me in paradise. So we know that the minute you die as a believer, you do go somewhere special. I don't think you can call it a holding area because there is no time. Time was created by man for us, period. So we have to realize that measuring anything in time before time began, is foolish. It makes no sense. But it just happens to be the way it is. We, so we've got to be careful about that. So why do communists want violent overthrows? Look this up. Violent. I had something on it earlier I wanted to use and I lost it. Why do communists prefer violent overthrow? That's the topic of the show, and I might bounce around a little bit, but there is some reason that they desire a violent coup, a communist revolution. The Communist Manifesto broke down the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. Manifesto of the Communists. Straight from Karl Marx's writing. He's got bourgeoisie and proletariat. He says, the history of society in the past is the history of class struggles. Okay? So basically he's saying throughout history, there have been classes of people that have struggled. I think you would agree with that. I think where we're going to quickly deviate is if he's going anywhere I think I know he's going, I would say no, it doesn't matter. We're born, I think, to a degree, we're born into the atmosphere or environment that God wants our soul in. I believe that our soul and our spirit makes up our personality far more than our physical traits. Our physical traits teach us how to behave certain ways. If a girl is drop-dead gorgeous, if she's absolutely just perfectly beautiful, right? She's going to attract some eyes from guys and girls. Now, I know the structure, the scripture, you know, if a man's looked at a woman with lust in his heart and he's already committed adultery. And do you know, folks, that you can actually appreciate the beauty, this is for men, you can actually learn to appreciate the magnificent beauty of a woman without lusting, okay? When you realize it is God's creation. God created that woman to be beautiful, to be so desirable. Even the watchers that were sent here to look out for Adam and Eve until they reproduced enough to be safe, even the watchers believe, you know, in God. It says, you say you believe, well, even the demons believe and shudder. Which is basically saying, believing in God really means very little. What matters is whether he's Lord of your life or not. And I think that, in a nutshell, is the way it ought to be. I think that people need to celebrate a Sabbath and keep it holy, as the Ten Commandments say. Jesus clearly said, I did not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Okay? I think that's really hard for Westerners. Until I spent a couple weeks in Israel, I just didn't get it. I just thought that a Jew was another religion. Well, the problem is, Judaism was transferred to Christianity under Constantine. Constantine wanted to be very popular. He wanted to be the most popular ruler ever. He was good. He did nice things. He was charitable. We talked about charity. I've had so many situations, well, two, when I was in a big city and I tipped the cab driver a substantial amount of money, far more than anyone ever would, because I do this. I have this conviction when I figure, you know, what's it take me to make $100 or $200? Now, we'll have days that we don't do that well and other days that we do really well. But what is it that makes, you know, people that way? And, you know, I think we need to explore that. So, bourgeoisie and proletariat. He says, this is Karl Marx, from a newspaper clipping or a clipping of something. He says, the history of society as to the pace Is the past... Okay, let's try again. Sorry for that noise. That's my glasses hitting the mic. Okay, here we go. The history of society in the past is the history of class struggles. We just discussed that. I don't care where you're born. If you're born in India, okay, and you're born into the wrong caste system, your job was at one time to just clean the streets. Now the streets are so filthy and rancid, no one would dare try. So these guys run around and they dumpster dive and they look for junk to sell. And then they, you know, they sell it to get an extra buck, and that's how they function. That's how they live their lives. But, so everyone who knows history knows that we've had struggles. Sadly, the biggest struggles we've ever had are current. They're under Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump is an interesting guy with an interesting name, okay? What's weird is that Trump, the very word means final overriding factor or resource. I've discussed that. Once we elected him, which all the polls said we didn't, God bought us more time. We need what they call a blue wave in the midterms. Historically, whatever party gained power to the White House, the other party usually ended up picking up, you know, most of the expenses and that kind of stuff. And in this case, in the house we're buying, we're not quite like that. So, he says, freemen and slaves, okay? So he's talking about the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, okay? So it's important that you understand the difference between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. It's pretty obvious that, you know, when you do the bourgeoisie compared to the pro... it's nice having a computer in the recording room, but man, what a time-sucking device. I do have a system to accept callers. The company that was sent out by a friend of mine who owns a radio station, the guy that was sent out was super sharp, but he never really prioritized our job, and so there we go. So what's the difference between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, okay? These terms were used and defined by Karl Marx, okay? When you hear Marx, Marxism, Che Guevara shirts, you know what you're dealing with. You're usually dealing with ignorance and stubbornness. In Marxism, the proletariat is the working class. The proletariat is the everyday working man. Now, back then, there were no labor laws. There was no limit on verbal or physical abuse, sexual abuse. It was very sad, and it had to be very traumatic for some of the women who just wanted a job, and pretty soon some creep, as far as they're concerned, is luring them into their bedroom, trying to talk them into doing acts they don't want to do, and it's sad. Sex drive, which has nothing at all to do with what the show is about today. But I was talking with an employee the other day. Sex drive is crazy stuff, right? I mean, God, when you're young, God gives men just this crazy sex drive. A lot of young women don't understand their husbands that well, and they don't realize that men are visual. When my daughter was very young and naive, she was a Christian girl going to a Christian school, virgin, all that. Okay? But she would dress in ways that was so provocatively, you know, unscrupulous, we'll say. She would dress that way so bad that she would be attracting the wrong kind of people. And she'd be sending signals out that she was looking for certain styles of relationships, which she certainly was not. She was just too young and naive to know. And I think the proletariat, the working class, may be the same way, okay? I mean, they just know that they get up every day, they go to work. And I think what frustrates the Karl Marxes of the world was that he lived at a time when this was very, very common. And at that time, it was so common to operate that these things that he lived in a time when things were, they were just very, very different than they are now. Okay, and so communism at the time was very, very acceptable. Scarcely so, right? Different people have different motivations and different drives. It's the way we're made. We talked about the soul. I believe there's been proofs. You've probably seen some of the twin studies where they'll find identical twins, or even, I just saw one recently, triplets that were separated at birth, and they went to three different families. I mean, you cannot tell me that 3 months in a womb with somebody else doesn't develop some sort of a friendship. So these people became, you know, more and more friendly and so on. So anyway, the items used and defined by Karl Marx and are part of Marxism. In Marxism, the proletariat is the working class, including farmers, low-skilled factory workers. They don't own any means of production. They're just there, doing time, filling a slot, working the assembly line. I think the olden days was 12-hour work days, 6 days a week. Constantine got the seventh day converted, or got Shabbat, the seventh day converted, into a situation where, you know, he just did him a lot of good. So, okay, so they see the proletariat as the working class, and low-skilled factory workers. They do not own any means of production. They own nothing. That's why it's awesome when companies give out stock shares. The problem is we're in a bubble economy. If you have stock shares and stock options, by all means, cash them out. I personally say buy gold right now. I say buy gold, silver, and semi-numismatic coins, dollars. Morgan silver dollars have done, you know, relatively well. When I got into this business, when I got into coin collecting and I had money and I wanted coins, and I called the local coin shop and I went in and I wanted some just gold bullion, gold and silver bullion. And they said, why? I said, well, that's what I want to own. And they said, no, you don't. You want a $20 gold piece and X number of silver dollars. And I was like, no, I want my bullion. And they said, this is bullion. It's just also legal tender face value. It's got antique potential upside, which we've already seen. I consigned a bunch of my guns this last week to sell. Blown away. I mean, there was a time way back when the word was out on the street that Kevin Walter would trade guns for gold, okay? Well, it was for my own private collection. And I made that very clear so the ATF didn't have to come here and worry about me not filling out paperwork right. So I had a cop one time who, don't ask me why, he was moving to Australia, okay? In Australia, firearms are just not accepted. They're not an acceptable form of anything. They don't want them. You can own them. You have to keep them in a special locker at the police station. You can check your weapons out. You need to tell them where you're going, how long you're going to be gone, you know, et cetera and so forth. And when you're done, that gun better be back on time or they'll give you a citation, which to us is a subpoena or a, you know, ultimatum, is how they work. So the bourgeoisie, so the proletariat's the working class. To Karl Marx, the bourgeoisie were the capital class, okay? The wealthy who owned most of the means of production. So you had the wealthy and you had the poor. The poor worked for the wealthy. The wealthy lived at levels you would not believe. I cannot tell you how many houses have been I thought unsaleable that have sold. So, you know, I'm the wrong judge of character. The house we just bought was very large, and part of it, we did it because it's two level. My wife has rheumatoid arthritis. There's times the elevator's nice for hauling equipment up and down. Even though the house is 1,000 square feet less than ours, plus it has 10,000 square feet in three shops, it turned out, you know, it's a good price. It worked out okay, but, you know, it's the moving thing. So I would be considered the bourgeoisie at the time. Apparently because I was considered that way, trained that way, led that way, I would be taught, according to history, to mistreat people dearly, to have a chip on my shoulder, incredible arrogance. And so Karl Marx wanted to protect the working class and low skilled. And the biggest problem that took place at that time was there was so many people interested, they could never, ever implement it fairly. They used the lottery, they used different systems. That's why a lot of these people you'll see got jobs at the TSA. You'll even see people working at the post office that aren't doing that good because they tend to, just collect a paycheck is what it is. And their life support systems for a paycheck. So not good, not good. So anyway, enough of that. It's kind of interesting that the page I had went away. Think my guy might think. So here's the rest of Karl Marx's writing. He says, so freemen and slaves, patriarchs and plebeians, nobles and serfs, guild members and journeymen, in short, oppressors and the oppressed, have always stood in direct opposition to one another. The struggle between them has sometimes been open, sometimes concealed, but always continuous. never ending, a never ceasing struggle, which is invariably ended either in a revolutionary alteration of the social system or the common distraction of, and then it goes on. I could probably get into this a little bit deeper. It says, invariably ended either in a revolutionary alteration of the social system or in the common destruction of the contending classes. So Karl Marx thought everything in life was based on a clash between the upper and the lower. The biggest problem was in what we now call Keynesian economics. You know, you look at when John Maynard Keynes lived. He lived from June of 1883 to 1946. So, let me see if I can find out when John Maynard... Okay, no, that was Keynes. Keynes lived from 83 to 46. Okay, now, let's look up Karl Marx. When did Karl Marx live? Let's see, when did Karl Marx live? He was from May of 18. We got Marx. He lived, they don't really show when he died. 83 birthday, that's a mess. Well, that doesn't make it. 1818. No. I'm sorry. This is crazy. This is not correct. I'll get something that's correct here pretty quick. Because I'm afraid the overlap has had a huge impact on our world today. Unfortunately, this is just the story of my life. Folks, I hate computer pop-up ads. It's just yuck, yuck, and more yuck. And yuckity yuck yuck yuck. So we had Karl Marx was from May of 1818 to 83. Okay, so from 1818 to 83. Then we had Darwin. Let's figure out when Darwin lived. There's a reason I'm doing this. Okay. Now, Charles Darwin, most people realize, on his deathbed, denounced evolution. Let's see, when did Darwin, Charles Darwin live? And my apologies, you're waiting around for this. It's ridiculous that you'd have to sit and wait for me to do this. February of 09 to 82, so 1809, so now we've got Darwin, 1889, until 1809, I mean, until 1882. Interesting date mixture. You got Karl Marx from 83 to 16. You got, or I mean, Keynes, 1883 to 16. Okay. And then you have Karl Marx, which my handwriting's messed up. I think that there's a stack of influence here that's relevant. And that's why I'm doing this. And he went from 1818 to 1883. That was a mess. 1818 to 83. And then we had Darwin from 09 to 1882. Okay. So Karl Marx was way ahead He's 1883 to 1946. And then we had Karl Marx from 1818 to 1883. And then we had Darwin from 1809 to 1882. Okay, so there's a reason here why this is relevant. Okay, and Darwin came first, then Marx, then Keynesian. And then Keynes, okay? Here's why it matters. First, Darwin comes on the scene with evolution, okay? He's older than Marx by about 9 years, and then Keynes comes way after both of them have established a theology, basically. So here's the deal. Darwin comes up with this stupid theory of evolution because he goes to the Galapagos Islands and wherever else, and he sees all these crazy animals that don't make sense. They, you know, maybe there was some macroevolution that caused that. But, you know, it doesn't mean that they were a transitional stage or a missing link. But people say Darwin rejected his theory. Some say on his deathbed, some say whenever. Pew Research say it's true. You know, of course, other resources tried to deny it. He said it would take too long to take, and we can look up the reasons why he rejected it. And of course, you're always going to get junk on the web that argues. Pew Research, let's see how bad this article is. Too long, too many. Basically, Darwin rejected it, but let's not get into that. We're eating up a lot of time, and I apologize. There's so much. There's all these different schools of thought and people, but they all overlap. So you got Darwin who invents evolution. Okay, so he says there is no God. God is dead. No God. Okay, so if there's no God, then you get Karl Marx that says this is so bad. Our working conditions are so bad. The people are getting so abused by the ownership, which was typically true. It was the owners of these factories that would have these massive mansions. These people would work 60, 70, 80-hour work weeks for pennies. They'd go home. They wouldn't even have enough money to buy firewood and a match, okay? This is true, to cook food, right? So they're like, okay, there's no God. Karl Marx is like, enough is enough. These were tough times. The factory leaders were rough. So Darwin says there's no God. It's all a big accident. Karl Marx comes in and says, well, if there's no God, then we need to structure so that man can run his own system. Then Keynes comes in and says, well, you know, I've studied and studied and studied Karl Marx's manifesto. And he says, look, it's all about the money. It's all about the money. I don't care. Solomon said, it's all about the money. He said, money's the answer to everything. So Keynes creates a destructive economic system. Terrible. Terrible destructive. And we implement it. We take it on in the Federal Reserve. And it's bad. It's just bad, right? We've converted every note we've got to a fiat currency banknote. We were deceived after the creation of the Fed. They left the gold redeemable clause on the paper money so that people could put their gold in and out of the bank. They let that go on for a while. Why? they wanted to build a false sense of confidence in the people, because what ended up happening was they finally began to just leave their money there. They said enough is enough. So they did. They left their money there. And then later on, FDR comes on the scene. He discovers what's going on, and what's going on is they have issued 33-to-1 notes that are redeemable in gold to actual supposed gold on hold, on reserve, which to this day people argue the golden Fort Knox doesn't exist. They're partially correct. I know I have a friend who's seen it. He was hired when these 1933 St. Gaudens came out. They were supposed to have never been released from the mint. And when they came back to be authenticated, the mint confiscated them, and then attorneys went to war to get them back. But during that time, Keynes created an economic system that would make socialism work. How does socialism work? You have to take away all the wealth of the people and create complete dependence on the government. Okay, so he did that very, very effectively. So that is how we ended up in a short period of time in a godless nation. Now, after that, you have Keynes who lives till 1946. You've got Marx till 1883. Around the turn of the century, you have communism, believe it or not, being the most popular theory you can imagine. A little after that, we create fiat currency. People are like, this works fine. They don't understand that it was backed by gold for a while. Finally, we get FDR and we have the crash of 29 orchestrated. Why? Number one, they had two choices, admit fraud or two, fix it. So what they did is they did a heavy money retraction and they literally just crashed the economy, just destroyed it. Now, all the major players, the J.P. Morgans, the Kennedys, and all these guys, what do you suppose they did with their money within days before the crash of 29? Well, I'll tell you what. Every one of them, okay, transferred their money to gold prior to the crash of 29. So you've got, you know, J.P. Morgan and all these bankers, you know, Kennedys, that they transferred their wealth to gold before the crash of 1929. Doing a little research here. Okay, sorry for that. So how did they know? How did they know that this financial crisis was coming? Well, the fact of the matter is they created it. It was self-created. It was necessary. We had issues where, you know, we had World War One, we had a whole bunch of stuff. So, you know, when you get into the history of money, you start to look at this, these people controlled money. If they didn't, they would just be like you or I, but they literally controlled the money. So they made it so that eventually they set you up so you would go broke. And I know I'm long-winded and I'm running out of time. So last week I went right over the top. So they created money in a way that it would self-destruct, intentionally self-destruct. Why? To transfer all the wealth and assets to the government and the Fed. Now, people say there's no gold in Fort Knox. Baloney. There's almost 7 metric tons. Do you remember when Angela Merkel from Germany said they wanted their gold back? 7 years we strung her out. And guess how much we gave her? Nothing. Why? Because it's not ours. The gold's been double pledged. It's been pledged once to the Federal Reserve, okay? And it's been pledged another time to foreign countries to pay off debt. So we would send them these bearer bonds or whatever backed by gold. And so countries have all the detail of this gold they own. And so the gold was not for the working man. They took it away from us because they needed it for these other things. And this is where the problem lies. This is why there's no gold standard today. They used it up. The Fed consumed it. The people that these foreign nations we owed debt to sadly consumed it, wanted it. They didn't want our paper money anymore, and it just got real bad. It got real bad. So, bottom line, it's been kind of a weird show. My apologies. I spent a lot of time searching stuff. And, you know, the history of money, I never really got into. I always want to. We've got the Rockefellers and the head of President Wilson's war, World War One. He had Wilson's industry board, Bernard Baruch and Rockefeller and Bernard Baruch. They each made over $200 million. Between 1914 and 18 during World War One. I'm out of time. So bottom line, folks, give us a positive review on Google. Get a free silver dollar, 5 stars. Give us a call. Let us build a portfolio. We'll help you save your money. We'll protect and preserve it in a godly, conservative, long-term financial way. Praise God. Be back soon. Take care. Bye-bye.